Juhava Vacham Juhava Manasi Tat Prana Itare Chatam Mrityavapanam Sostargam Tam Pachantve Yajohavit. Then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, then the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then his pure self, he became free from the material conception of life. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhisthira, like his brother Arjuna, began to concentrate and gradually became freed from all material bondage. First, he concentrated all the actions of the senses and amalgamated them into the mind. Or in other words, he turned his mind toward the transcendental service of the Lord. He prayed that since all material activities are performed by the mind in terms of actions and reactions of the material senses, and since he was going back to Godhead, the mind would wind up its material activities, and he turned towards the transcendental service of the Lord. There was no longer a need for material activities. Actually, the activities of the mind cannot be stopped, for they are the reflection of the eternal soul. But the quality of the activities can be changed from matter to the transcendental service of the Lord. The material color of the mind is changed when one washes it from contaminations of life breathing and thereby frees it from the contamination of repeated births and deaths and situates it in pure spiritual life. All is manifested by the temporary embodiment of the material body, which is a production of the mind at the time of death. And if the mind is purified by practice of transcendental loving service of the Lord and is constantly engaged in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there is no more chance of the mind's producing another material body after death. It will be freed from absorption and material contamination. The pure soul will be able to return home, back to Godhead. All the sense organs into the mind, then the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then, as pure self, he became free from the material conception of life. Yad yad acharati sreshtas tad tad evetaro jana sayat pranam kurute. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that what great people do, the common people will follow. So it is the most important example for anyone in a leadership position to behave in life in such a way, in all phases, to be an example for humanity to make spiritual progress. Bhagavatam says, Guru na sasyat, svajini na sasyat, that anyone who has the position where people are depending on them, it is their first and greatest responsibility above all others to set such an example by their words and acts that their dependents are led in such a way that they never have to take birth again in this material world. Whether one is a guru, whether one is a teacher, mother, father, king, on all levels, people are leaders in society. And Srila Prabhupada and the great acharyas, they have seen that this is the greatest weakness in society today. There are no proper leaders setting proper examples for people to follow. The teachers are simply after money. They're simply after prestige. Or at the best, they take great pride in seeing their students get a mundane education so they can perform better mundane works in this mundane world. The parents, they are so concerned with the physical health of their children, good education, they work so hard to leave a nice inheritance of much, much money, trying to marry them into good families where their economic problems will not be so much in the future, where they will have luxury and sense gratification throughout their lives. Of course, these are the relatively good parents. In Kali Yuga, even this is becoming rare. They are killing their children in the wombs. And as far as political leaders, they are very much anxious to gain power, prestige, fame, make lots and lots of money, get what they can when they can before they're kicked out. And if somehow or other they have so much power and control that no one can kick them out, they just hold on to their power and prestige until the day they die, or until they become so senile that they just can't even think properly. And as far as on all levels, people have forgotten the real purpose of life. So Srila Prabhupada explained that the great need is leaders in society. And when he spoke about leaders, he was expecting every single devotee who comes to this movement to be a leader in society, to show by example what is the goal of life and how to achieve it. The parents, every mother and father should be an ideal mother and father, to lead their children and lead the rest of the society in the understanding of what is the goal of life and how to achieve it. The brahmacharis, the sannyasis, whatever our position may be, real leadership means to give the example by which our Krishna consciousness is developing and we can help others to also follow that line. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was actually a perfect devotee. There was no need for him to renounce anything, because he had already renounced everything by utilizing everything in Krishna's service. When he was king of Hastinapur, he only accepted the throne in the service of Krishna. He was fully cognizant that everything is the property of God and everything is meant for the service of God. So therefore, he was a perfect renunciate. He was beyond the sannyas of the Varnashram system. He was a pure devotee. It is explained in the Vaishnav Sampradaya that to be a Brahman or to be a sannyasi are the highest categories in the Chaturvarnam or Varnashram system. But to be a Vaishnav is above Brahman and above sannyas. To be a real Vaishnav means the perfection, the fulfillment of the Varnashram system. To be completely dedicated in the loving service of the Lord with one's body, mind, words, and very life. So Maharaj Yudhisthira was a pure Vaishnava. He was a Paramhamsa. He was Krishna's intimate associate. And there was not a moment in his life that he was not remembering Krishna, that he was not willing to sacrifice his own free will for the will of Krishna. So he was a pure devotee. But still we find here that he's going through the process of externally making the gesture of renouncing everything in this world because he was king, because it was his duty that he had to make his pure devotion and his surrender to Krishna exemplary and visible for all classes of men. Because in this world, there are so many material allurements. And due to our attachments to the various objects of the senses, our mind becomes endlessly attached to those things, and the mind, according to what it remembers at the time of death, produces our next life, produces the situation in which the soul is transmigrated into any one of the 8,400,000 species of life that exist in Krishna's creation. So what is our first and foremost responsibility before we die? It is to become completely detached from all the things of this world and completely attached to the loving service of Krishna. Therefore, the acharyas have said, die before you die. Or others say, die to live. If you want to live, you must die. This is a fact. And if you want to die, go on living. Hare Krishna. What does this mean? This is the most important thing to understand in our whole life. Without understanding this principle, we'll never understand what is Krishna consciousness. What does it mean to live? To live means to be conscious of our own eternal living reality. The soul is the source of all life. There is no life without the spirit soul. The body is dead matter, and the mind is also dead matter, and the intelligence is also dead matter, and the false ego is also dead matter. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita these eight types of dead matter. Aparayamitasvanyam prakritim virime param. Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho Iyedam Dharayate Jagat. But beside all this dead matter all around us, there is the spirit soul, which is alive, which is conscious. So the soul is life and matter is dead. if we are aware of the soul and engaged in the activities of the soul, we are actually alive. And if we are conscious only of dead matter, and we are only engaged in the activities of trying to enjoy the interaction between the various chemicals of material existence, we are factually conscious of the dead. This is a society of the living dead. As far as consciousness goes, it's hard to even say living dead. It's simply dead. The body is dead. If you think you're your body, you're spiritually dead. Haribo. If you're trying to enjoy your body, you're spiritually dead. So those who are trying to live according to this conception, they're dead. Live to die. That is what modern philosophy is, whatever they want to call it. They are living simply for their spiritual death. But the Vaishnava philosophy is die to live. That means we have to let this misconception die. We have to let our material attachments die. We have to let our false ego die. And through this process, we actually enter into the realm of real life, real living. So Maharaj Yudhisthira is making such a wonderful, wonderful example for all of us to follow. It is explaining how very, very systematically, according to the Sankhya conception, how he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, then the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then, as a pure self, he became free from all conceptions of life. So what Maharaj Yudhisthira has done when it says that the sense organs, he withdrew. The awareness of the sense organs, he withdrew his awareness from the senses and their objects and brought it into the mind. And subtler he brought his consciousness, his awareness, until he came to the subtlest platform of the material ingredients, and he merged that into death. That doesn't mean that physically he died. That means that he completely detached himself from any conception outside of Krishna consciousness. He completely detached himself and made himself dead from any selfish desire of this world. To the degree we have our own selfish desires to enjoy, to that degree we cannot have Krishna consciousness. Therefore, what is death? For the soul, there is no death. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin. All what we weep and cry when we see a loved one die, all that's actually happened is the soul has gone to another place, and the body is just going through its natural cycle of transformation of elements. There's really no death. It's just transformation of material elements and a transfer of the soul into another place. So what really is true death? True death is when we renounce the misconception that we are the enjoyer, when the false ego dies and comes into the life of the real ego, that I am the servant of Krishna. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. This is the very essence of self-realization. To let the false conception of the ego die so that the real conception of the ego can live. That I am not the enjoyer, which is false ego, let that misconception die. That's the only thing that really dies, is our conceptions. Because material elements never die, they just transform. And the soul never dies, it just reincarnates. So what dies? When we say die to live, we're talking about letting this misconception die. That I am the enjoyer, that I am the proprietor of anything. Because when that dies, then we actually come to real life. That I am Krishna's. I am simply existing for Krishna's pleasure and for Krishna's service. So this is Maharaj Yudhisthira's wonderful, wonderful surrender to the Lord. And of course, the process that he has taken is in many ways, it is true, but it is also symbolic of the process of devotional service. Because actually, when we are properly engaged in bhakti, all of these things are happening. When we engage our mind and our senses in the service of the Lord, when we identify our ego as the servant of the Lord, then all of what we are reading about in this verse is automatically taking place. We die. We die materially. Our illusions, our misconceptions die, and our real life awakens. So die to live. This is for brahmacharis. They're not allowed to think in any other terms except die to live. If they're thinking about enjoying anything of this world, then they will have too much trouble. They're simply trying to die so that they could live in spiritual life 24 hours a day. And grihasthas, they are going through a gradual process of also coming to that platform of understanding and realization of how to die to live. Maharaj Yudhisthira was a grihastha. But he had no ego. He was Krishna conscious. So in all of our varnas and all of our ashrams, whatever situation we may be in, according to how we could best serve and how, according to how best we are situated for making spiritual progress, the goal is the same, to be a pure Vaishnava. And this is what it means to become a pure Vaishnava. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayi samimasacha. To abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to Krishna. When Maharaj Yudhisthira was on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Krishna wanted him to win the war. Krishna wanted him to win the war because paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam. Krishna descends to annihilate the miscreants. And Duryodhana was a miscreant. And therefore the battle of Kurukshetra was to replace Duryodhana with Yudhisthira. Why? Because then human society could be actually following a proper exemplary leader. Yudhisthira Maharaj, he was content if Duryodhana was willing to give him one small village and let Duryodhana rule the rest of the world. He was satisfied. And even if Duryodhana didn't want to give even enough land to put the head of a pin through, Yudhisthira, he was ready to just live in the forest. But Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, insisted, fight this war. Arjuna, he did not want to fight. But Krishna insisted, you must fight. For me, it is my will. I have come to this planet to reestablish the principles of religion. Religion means dharma. And Yudhisthira's name is Dharmaraj, which means he is religion. So when Krishna says, I've come to establish dharma, that means he's come to establish Dharmaraj as Dharmaraj, to establish dharma as king. So it was his mission. So Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers fought the battle. And in fighting the battle, Krishna wanted to show the world the nature of their surrender, the nature of how they were dead of any ego outside of pleasing Krishna. Abhimanyu, who was the most favorite loving child of Arjuna, and even Yudhisthira, everybody in their whole family, they loved Abhimanyu the best. He was the son of Subhadra, who was the sister of Krishna. He was very special to everyone. And Yudhisthira promised Abhimanyu that you do this favor for me. You know how to get in this formation. This formation is destroying our forces that the Kurus have created. You know the secret how to get in. Abhimanyu said, I know the secret to get in, but I do not know the secret to get out. Yudhisthira said, we'll be with you. We'll protect you. You have nothing to fear. So Abhimanyu, he saved the entire Pandava army because he broke that formation. But as soon as he got in, the Kurus, they were expert. They closed everything, so no one else could get in. And it was him against everyone. So many big Maharathis. Karna, Duryodhana, Bhishma, Drona, so many. They were fighting and fighting. And ultimately, although he fought like a great hero, by all unfair means he was killed. So you can imagine what a devastation that was to the hearts of the Pandavas. But still they knew that Krishna is the ultimate controller. If Krishna did not allow it to happen, it couldn't have happened. But they didn't give up their enthusiasm to go on fighting for Krishna. Krishna tested them to show the world what is a real devotee. Whatever may happen around, a devotee always remains completely faithful to the service of the Lord, never loses faith. That is the substance of Mahabharata and Bhagavad Gita. Recently, a big politician who also claims to be a very great Hindu, that person, one relative, died. And one of our devotees went to him to ask for some help. He says, "I don't believe in God anymore. Because if God is great, why did he allow my loved one to die?" And this is a person who, with all respects, is spiritual leader, political leader, and in many ways spiritual leaders for millions and millions and millions of people. But he basically gave up faith in God because somebody he loved died. Not in a way that they should have died by his calculations. Krishna tested him to see what he's made out of, what kind of faith he has. Maharaj Yudhisthira is the real leader of Hindutva. Dharmaraj, his own beloved died, his own son got killed in unfair means. His beloved nephew got killed by unfair means. And he went right on fighting, always remembering Krishna and chanting Krishna's holy names. This is Vaishnava. And then later on in the battle, when Dronacharya was destroying the armies, the only way to stop Drona was to somehow or other convince him that his son, Ashwatthama, was dead. Now Drona knew that Ashwatthama had many benedictions from Lord Shiva. So how is it possible for Ashwatthama to be killed? Dronacharya would not believe anyone saying such a thing. So Krishna said, "Yudhisthira, who was so pious, so noble, so completely honest, that he never ever considered within the deepest depths of his consciousness anything untrue in his whole life. Compare yourself to such a man of that caliber. What type of cheating propensities we have. We're always thinking about saying something or other just to get our ways, just to protect our false prestige, to somehow or other protect our image, to somehow or other get what we want. We're willing to say the needful and do the needful. And even if we somehow or other, by our noble endeavor, curb our immoral thoughts, still those thoughts are there. Has any of you ever thought in your mind, considered anything immoral in your life? Lusty desires, egoistic desires, telling lies, criticizing others. How many times a minute do immoral thoughts come into our mind? But Maharaj Yudhisthira, from the time of his birth, never did an immoral thought ever come into his mind. And everyone knew this. He was so pure, so clean, that when he spoke, it was the truth. Today, people speak, and everyone thinks, "I wonder what the truth is." What to speak of politicians? He was the politician. Today, when politicians speak, everyone's wondering, "I wonder why he said that. I wonder what he's wonder what his motive is. I wonder what's behind the scene. Huh? Everyone thinks like that. Doesn't matter what country. In America, there's so many cases against the presidents. When Srila Prabhupada was preaching from this section of Srimad Bhagavatam, I remember he was giving many wonderful lectures. And at that time, the president of the United States was Richard Milhouse Nixon. And he was on the verge of getting kicked out of office for doing immoral cheating activities. Do you remember? It was big. He was under intense investigation. The whole country was topsy-turvy because the president was under investigation and about to get kicked out for being a cheater. And he was saying, no, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. But there was tapes of him doing it. He was saying, no, I didn't do it. And everybody understood. But how can we believe this person? And anyways, ultimately, he was kicked out. Srila Prabhupada says, this is the leaders of today. They get kicked out. He said, the only difference between Mr. Nixon and all the other leaders in the world is he was caught. It's a fact. So, people don't believe anyone anymore because everyone, they just like water flows from the Himalayas, similarly lies flow from their they'll just say anything, do anything, whatever is expedient to maintain power. But Maharaj Yudhisthira, when he spoke, everyone was, yes, this is the truth. Because he had integrity. He was a man of real honor. This is one of the qualities of a kshatriya, honor. They never lie. They are willing to die before speaking anything that is untrue. So he had developed the highest reputation by his completely pure, straightforward nature. And Krishna told Yudhisthira, I want you to tell a lie. Yudhisthira couldn't believe that Krishna wanted him to lie. I want you to tell Dronacharya that Ashwatthama is dead. But Ashwatthama wasn't dead. He was just in another part of the battlefield, alive as anything, fighting. In fact, Ashwatthama had such a benediction from Lord Shiva that he wouldn't die, that he's still living. He still hasn't died. Five 5,000 years ago, he was pronounced dead, but he's still living. Prabhupada said he's living like a madman in the Himalayas somewhere, wandering about the earth. You may have met him. But he doesn't tell anyone he's Ashwatthama. He's just wandering the earth like a madman. So he's still living. So how can Dronacharya possibly think that Shiva's benediction has gone wrong? Huh? Dronacharya knew the power of Shiva's blessings. So what type of conviction it would have taken to make Drona believe that his son was killed? But Krishna knew that what Yudhisthira speaks, all living beings will accept it as truth. No one can doubt Yudhisthira. This was his integrity. This is the way leaders are supposed to be. So, Yudhisthira actually hesitated. He hesitated from surrendering to Krishna. He is Dharmaraj, and Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Purityajya. Forget your Dharmaraj. Surrender to me. Krishna says, abandon being Dharmaraj and be my servant. So he hesitated. It is said that he was asked, okay, then you say Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. And then Bhima went out and killed an elephant named Ashwatthama. So Yudhisthira surrendered. Ashwatthama. But Krishna has perfect timing. As soon as he said elephant, Krishna blew his conch shell. Ashwatthama is dead. Dronacharya said, Ashwatthama is really dead? And Yudhisthira said, yes, he's dead. So Drona decided, I cannot fight if Ashwatthama is dead. Too much sorrow in my heart. And in this way he saved. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he surrendered. Die to live. He surrendered everything. Even his good name and fame he was willing to surrender to serve Krishna. Because good name and fame is also a temporary material thing. The only thing that is eternal is our devotion to Krishna. So in this way, Maharaj Yudhisthira has shown us the path of real surrender. By letting this misconception that we are the enjoyer, that we are the proprietor, that we are having a special connection with this particular body or with the relatives of this body or with the national affiliation of this body. All affiliations of this body are illusion. To let all those things die and understand and realize that I am the eternal soul, part of Krishna, the eternal servant of Krishna, that is Krishna consciousness. Then our pure self is manifested, and then only at the time of death can we return back home, back to Godhead. Somehow or other, before that moment of death, we must allow our material conceptions to die. Is there any questions?
When we die, and if fortunately we go to the spiritual world, then mind, you said, is also matter, subtle matter. So is the mind being matter left behind here, or when you go to the spiritual world, is the same mind in a Krishnaized way there, or is there something like a separate entity the soul has called a spiritual mind which goes along with the soul back to the Godhead?
The soul what happens to the mind when the soul goes back to Godhead? Does it remain here? Is that what you're asking? The element of mind remains here. But your captivity within that element is no longer. The mind is a material element, it is an energy. And right now, in the conditioned state, the soul is entrapped within that material element. But when you become liberated from the mind, the element of mind still remains within this world. But you are free. You are liberated. Just like body. When you're liberated, you're freed from the misconception of entrapment in this body. But still the elements of the body remain. The elements of the mind remain always within a creation. Does that answer your question?
The entities who are in the spiritual world, they also have thinking and willing and feeling. They also think, I want to serve Krishna, they feel about Krishna. So is there a soul having a spiritual mind of its own in the spiritual world?
Yes, the mind has the soul has an ego, the soul has an intelligence, the soul has a mind, and the soul has a body. But it's completely different from the coverings in this material world. When the soul is free from these eight elements of material conditioning, then the true attributes of the soul begin to manifest.
Maharaj, is there any inner meaning to Maharaj Yudhishthira being renounced, external renunciation, or is just setting up example?
That is the meaning, that he is setting an example.
But not being external renunciation also is setting up an example of how a king should be, how a king should rule. Is it just change of service?
No. He's showing the proper behavior. That we should not be attached to a particular service. We should be attached to Krishna's will. Because for common men who are attached to the things of this world, the Varnashram system is there, which is a progressive process by which we make more and more advancement toward renunciation. Just like Grihastha Ashram, at the age of 50, you take Vanaprastha. Vanaprast means no more having children, no more responsibility for your children, no more job. You and your wife are simply doing bhajan and kirtan and associating with sadhus. Not too many people do like this, but this is the recommendation. And then at a certain stage, sannyas. Where you're just completely depending on Krishna and go off and have no other affiliation with anything that creates attachments to this world. So Maharaj Yudhisthira is setting this example that you shouldn't die in a material position. You should die in complete detachment from everything except your sadhana and your Krishna consciousness. So if Maharaj Yudhisthira, he didn't have to renounce his kingdom. But the people in general would see, if he died being king, they would think, just see, to the fag end of his life, he was sitting on his throne with his crown and his royal jewels. So for our sake, he showed how he detached himself from everything before leaving this world. Although he was actually already detached. Great persons don't have to do these things, but they do it anyway, just to show the ordinary people what they must do. That is their love and compassion. Any other questions? Radha Gopinath Prabhu, with his very fertile intelligence, has asked this question. If Maharaj Yudhisthira was a pure devotee, why did he hesitate before he told a lie? You're asking me. Who are you asking me? It is said that no one can understand the mind of a great Vaishnava. But it could be explained in many ways, because Maharaj Yudhisthira, his only purpose was to show the world what is Krishna consciousness in its purest sense. It could be understood that in his heart he was ready and willing immediately to surrender. But he hesitated just so his chariot would fall on the ground. And that way he would establish the principle that any hesitation from surrendering to Krishna is a defect in our spiritual life, so that you will not hesitate when you are asked to surrender to Krishna. So perhaps in his heart he had no hesitation, but he understood Krishna's will, that Krishna wanted to show what the quality of real surrender should be, and how any hesitation for anyone is a defect. Bhishma, his grandfather, he was on the Pandavas' side. He wanted the Pandavas to win the war. He was a pure devotee of Krishna. Why did he take the side of Duryodhana and Karna? Externally, because it is said he was attached to the favors that Duryodhana had given him. But internally, because he wanted to show the world an example Krishna wanted to teach, that even the greatest person, if he's in bad association, if he's not on the side of the Lord and his devotees, he will be destroyed. So he took that position of being defamed and misunderstood just so that Krishna can use him to teach a lesson to the world. Yudhisthira also. Why should he hesitate? But he knew Krishna's plan. His chariot was always above the ground, never touched the ground. But as soon as he hesitated, he touched the ground. Because he wanted to show the world that this is what happens when you hesitate. So in his pure devotional service, he was willing to be misunderstood just to let Krishna use him to teach the world an example. And we are still using it as an example, 5,000 years later. A positive example of this is what happens when you hesitate from surrendering. It is the favorite example of all Vaishnavas by the mercy of Maharaj Yudhisthira. Does that answer your question? Yes. So it can be understood in one of two ways. Either Maharaj Yudhisthira deliberately hesitated, deliberately appeared to hesitate, just so that Krishna could use him to show the world this example. Or it may be that by Krishna's yogamaya potency, Krishna personally caused him to hesitate for those few seconds just to show the world the same lesson. But in either case, it was not because of any defect in his own heart. Yes?
In this sloka we read that Yudhishthira Maharaj, he merged body into the death. But in later few shlokas to come, we read that all the Pandavas, they achieved the supreme abode with their same bodies. So how is it? Here we see that he merged his body in the death.
Doesn't say like that. What is explained here is, as we've been trying to explain, his body didn't die. But all material attachments and all material conceptions died. All attachments to the body, the senses, the mind, and the material elements were dead. That is what he did. That is real death. That is the death of a Vaishnava. And because he became so completely pure through this process, of course he was already completely pure, but he became so he exemplified such a purity through this process that even his body was completely spiritualized. And he and the Pandavas, they had no need to even give up their bodies. They were in their original spiritual bodies, even on this earth. Do you understand? When Vaishnavas say die to live, it doesn't mean we should all commit suicide. We should all start jumping off the top of the building. Guru Maharaj said, die to live. That type of death is simply an illusion. You will take your next birth as a ghost and live to suffer. Die to live means keep your body fit as possible for devotional service, not for sense gratification. That is what it means to die spiritually, die to live. Eat nice sabji, roti, dal, prasad. Keep your body fit, get sufficient rest, and utilize your life for Krishna's service, not for sense gratification.
In this context with Mayavadis, they say that the soul is like, just like something which has to finally merge. So what do they say about committing suicide? Why don't they destroy their body so that they can finally, they have to merge? So why not release that what is trapped by destroying the body?
Mayavadis understand, up until the point of the nature of the soul, Mayavadis understand everything properly. They understand that this material body is a temporary covering, that the mind and the intelligence and the false ego are temporary coverings. they understand the transmigration of the soul. Until you're liberated from any material attachment, you have to come back and take another body in this world. Huh? Their suicide is after they're already liberated from the whole material conceptions of life. They want to give up their spiritual identity. They want to give up their spiritual personality. They want to give up their servitor relationship with God. That is the last snare of Maya. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.